Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, your new home.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Go away, Mako.
Don't worry. I will protect you, my feeble turtle duck.
I will make no such promises.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
You amuse me. I will make you mine.
You shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I can't wait to get started. Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
Teresa.
I'm alive.
Sam.
Hey, people.
And Britt.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Bien. Well, not that bien, because one of the major things we'll be discussing this week is Nick pulling the last 5 episodes of this season from television and putting them online in the subsequent 4 weeks. So we will be discussing that, the recent San Diego Comic-Con Korra panel, which was today, and the episode that aired today, The Terror Within. All of that, a lot to get to. We gotta start with the recent huge news that Korra was pulled from television. We got this first from Nick and Mara, who looked at Nick's schedules, and then Nick, we see from Brian on Tumblr and Mike that the show's not canceled, even though Nick and Mara never said it was, and that it's just moving online, and we get further clarification. It's going to air on Nick.com every Friday from August 1st to August 22nd, and then we'll subsequently move on to other websites on the internet, Hulu Plus, Google Play, and Amazon. So I guess this story was pretty odd, obviously. We've never had anything like this for Avatar before. The fandom freaked out, very upset. And then the surprising thing is they got a lot of coverage in more mainstream websites. Mm-hmm. And then today everyone was like, and we'll get more clarification at the Comic-Con panel today. And then they basically said the same thing. And that's where we are. In terms of the podcast, looks like we'll be just keep doing Fridays because it'll keep airing on Fridays. Mel, what was your initial reaction to hearing this, and how have your thoughts evolved since then?
Well, I mean, I never thought it was canceled, which was everyone's first assumption. And it was something that I suppose was to be expected. I mean, I personally don't mind an online format, because either way you get to watch it. It is not as fun, I guess, when you've got not everyone watching it at the same time, because obviously now different people will watch it at different times when it goes online.
Yeah, even if Nick throws it up at 8:00, people will watch it at
different times. Which isn't as fun, because part of the fun is everyone watching together and freaking out on Tumblr and that sort of thing. No more SpongeBob ads. No more crazy quick cuts to Full House, so that's fun. But, I mean, I was more annoyed now after the end of this episode when they didn't announce that it was moving to online, which was very unexpected. But, yeah. I mean, it's good and it's bad, but personally I'm okay with it moving online.
I think it should be noted the decision was likely because of Korra's extremely low ratings. As I feel like I have adequately prepared listeners of this podcast for this to happen. I think last week I basically said just something terrible is going to happen. I don't know who can. Do you remember, Teresa, because you actually listened?
Oh, I don't remember that specifically. I'm sorry.
No one else here would have a better.
He posted it quite a bit, though.
Yeah, well, I certainly posted about it. I think I also said basically like, the ratings were just awful, and something was going to happen. It's weird because it was obvious the ratings were too low and Nick was going to do something, but they also can't really cancel it because basically they've thrown all their money at the show already. So what do you do if you're Nick? And I think this is a way that they can try to maximize their profits while not putting any more money into the show and preventing future losses. And let me explain that, because Next week, let's say a SpongeBob repeat replaces Core at 8 o'clock. What this does is it increases ad revenue during that time slot significantly, because SpongeBob will be getting about 1 million more viewers than Korra. It doesn't necessarily increase that specific revenue for that episode, but it increases for future time slots, because advertisers will pay based on how many viewers they think it's going to get, which is based on past results. So Nick was basically losing money by airing Korra on Friday nights. So they've taken that away, and they're still getting it out to fans, which just putting it up online, which costs no money for them, and still having some source of revenue through ads on Nick.com and revenue from purchases on these websites that they put it on. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that's like a very logical way to look at it, and I don't think that was like the fan reaction. I think people were generally extremely upset. Who here was very upset at Nick for this? I don't know if this is the right crowd for that, but
no, it wasn't.
I don't think super. I knew enough about Hallie. It to.
But
Allie was really upset.
Yeah, so if we had Allie here, she could talk.
She
about
would
that.
Go on a huge rant for us, and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think generally everyone was just very, very mad at Nick for the act of pulling the episodes, and I guess what I would say is Nick didn't really do anything. Mm-hmm. Wrong by pulling Korra from
there. Didn't do anything right either, though. Like, well,
think the annoyance in the fandom for that, even when you look at it logically, comes from the fact that this could have been avoided, and it was Nick's fault.
So
a lot of people's minds is because of the lack of marketing.
Yeah, well,
but at the same time, three of the episodes did leak in Spanish, and they had to figure out how to rectify that situation.
Right. So if we're gonna go back all the way, I would say before this season aired, I was basically one of the biggest critics of Nickelodeon's behavior in the fandom with, like, publicly. I wrote a pretty scathing opinion piece, and since then, and that was even before the episodes leaked. So, like, I've not been a fan of Nick's treatment of Korra for a while. Basically, I don't think they know what they're doing with it.
No, they're just really confused, and this kind of just proves, like, this was thrown up there and then pulled down, and it just didn't make a lot of sense.
So, like,
it's just, this was an illogical, it was a logical reaction to an illogical decision, and to a rushed decision, you know? It's like they're playing catch-up, or they're trying to fix past mistakes when they...
Yeah, so it's not really them trying to fix anything, because this is just something that had to be done. Okay, it should be noted, the way Nick is trying to spin this is that they're trying a new, that television is changing. What they said at Comic-Con was... Digital numbers for Korra have been huge and outweigh the television numbers. This is part of a huge change in the industry, and that Korra is in Nickelodeon's usual fare, so that this is some kind of shift and it's intentional. And what I would say to you is that this is very clearly all spin. This is not why Nickelodeon did this, or else, and I say this confidently, because they would have just started the season online if they wanted to try this new platform. Them doing it as a reaction, they're doing it clearly as a reaction to low ratings. It doesn't mean that they also can't use this as an experiment to try to explore having online revenue, but I also think this plan is very clearly not well thought out in terms of maximizing online profits. I feel like they should stream the episodes online at the very least. I don't really understand how they think they're going to make any significant revenue from this. They've said that they say that the panel, the digital downloads always outweigh the television. And yeah, that's true. You know what else that's true of is most popular shows right now on television, like Game of Thrones gets super pirated. Doesn't mean that HBO is just going to take it off of, it's going to do HBO Go only.
HBO Go would crash.
Which it does already.
Yes, already, but it would like explode.
Like they're trying to spin the story. Yes, more people watch Korra online than on TV. That doesn't mean that Nick can fully maximize the people that are watching online in terms of profits for them, and likely they will not with this. But
marketing tactic, you can only watch it online.
Yeah, so it's also especially funny because Nick's marketing campaign for the season of Korra has been, you can only see these episodes on Nickelodeon. And not nowhere else. And now it's the exact opposite. But I think it's telling that they had that marketing campaign because they thought Korra's low numbers were because people were watching online and not on television.
It could be that some parts, it's like there is different there's a hierarchy of marketing, right? And people who do different things and decide things within the marketing.
Right?
And it could be that the people who work specifically for Quora fought for this and they finally are getting their way.
Well, I see a common thread here. I'm going to get back to your point in a second, but mm-hmm. I see these two things as related. Nick had that marketing campaign because their big thing with Quora was, why isn't the show doing better if so many people are watching online? So they mm-hmm. said, we're going to try to get more people to watch on TV by saying you can't watch online. And then now they're giving up on that and saying, okay, now we're going to try to maximize these people that are watching online.
Mm-hmm.
But back to your point, I think Nick is a large company that has non-communicative departments in many cases. Mm-hmm. I talk about this in this opinion piece I'm referring to. Mm-hmm. I think it's called Nickelodeon Cannot Maintain a Culture of Fandom for Quora.
Yesterday, I think.
People have been reblogging it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very good piece. You should definitely check it out.
Thank you. And basically, what I think is that different parts of Nick have treated Quora like well and badly over the years. I think something that a lot of people have thought is that Nickelodeon is like purposely mishandling Quora, which I would say is very clearly not true, because kind of how companies work is that they want their shows to succeed because it makes them money. And that's kind of just all Nick's doing. I would say Nick's been more incompetent than having malice towards Quora. Any bad decisions they've had have just been because they don't know how to handle the show, mm-hmm. I would say. And it's unfortunate that this has happened, and I'm upset at them. I mean, okay, back to something I was saying before. So since then, the big thing is that Nick didn't really do anything wrong by the act of pulling Quora. So, I mean, it may seem unfair to us, but this is just what happens to shows that have low ratings. Like, Community got canceled this year despite having an extremely zealous fan base. Then it got picked back up, but like that's not nothing to do with NBC. Now Quora is getting pulled from TV because it doesn't have the ratings. It happens. But what Nick did do was react incredibly nonsensically to the episodes leaking by airing Quora a week after they announced it was going to air, which seems just utterly
ludicrous.
It's just ludicrous, insane. I still don't know why they did it. I still can't believe that a large company like this didn't see that was a bad idea. They must have had some thought process that we're missing here in order to get there. I don't know why.
I have no idea, but they're trying to like jump on the momentum of the people who are watching the Spanish episodes, because like very few people even watched the Spanish
episode. Right, so that's the thing. It was the people who watched the episodes that leaked were in the thousands, and the people who watch Quora are about a million. So it doesn't make sense proportionally.
No.
And a lot of the people that were going to watch the leaked episodes might have been the ones that are just going to torrent the show anyway.
Yeah. Why worry about them anyways? And they weren't up for very long, and like...
And again, and I know that Nick does care about the kids 2 to 11 demographic. Nobody watching the leaked Spanish episodes were 2 to 11. Actually, zero people. So
I can pretty much guarantee. So you had to find the torrent and then find not only a torrent with the episodes, but find the translations, which were not.
It's illegal. Don't do it, children.
Yeah, exactly.
Tried to explain torrenting to my 45-year-old mother this week, and she honestly could not do it. I was like, never mind.
That's good.
You know who else can't torrent things? Allie.
Well, that's very, very necessary. But anyway, yeah, so what I'm trying to say is I don't understand any of this behavior. I would say that I am upset. Are you okay? I would say I am upset at Nick, not for pulling Quora, but for the mishandling beforehand, and this is just inevitable. But it should be noted that we do still get to see the episodes in a somewhat coherent fashion, which is good.
They might actually all air on time. They'll all air in the same time. Well, but we're not competing for space with anybody anymore. Like, they should air in a consistent fashion, and we don't have to worry about hiatuses anymore.
I would say that if Nick went all out for this online move, they could maybe actually, like, increase Quora's popularity. Mm-hmm. But considering we just saw the episode, and they did not have any promotion after the episode, after Quora's final episode, maybe on television ever, saying that this is now online, How are the kids that Nick cares about total viewers and about kids 2 to 11? How are these kids 2 to 11 going to know that the show's online?
They can get on Quora.
They could go on Nick.com, but like maybe it's not hard to have a 10-second promo after. I don't really understand it.
Or, you know, the one
superheroes are more important.
Yeah, so theoretically, they could have aired
the
this.
Danger Dan show.
The rest funny. Of book two. Maybe what they're going to do is like next week, in Cora's normal time slot, air that second half of book three trailer that they showed at
Comic-Con. No, you have too much hope.
I don't think they'll do
too
it.
Too much but... hope. They're just going to pretend like Cora doesn't exist.
So SpongeBob in Cora's time slot.
So another. I think here's a thought process that they might be having. Now that Cora is not on television anymore, they don't need to advertise on television for it. The people that they're targeting to get money off of it online are going to see them promoting it online, and they don't maybe they don't need the kids 2 to 11. Maybe those aren't going to make them any money online. Rather, it's our age group who would be more likely to buy it.
Have we seen any? I mean, if we see advertisements for that.
Well, that's interesting because they did show Cora in the latest time slot on Friday before Nick at Night.
Yeah,
which, it's not saying much.
They've tried Cora at 7 on Friday nights. I think they find that it works best at 8. Avatar also aired at 8. Nick's prime time is very limited. Like, it ends at 9, right? So it's just, they think it's like darker fare for them, so they'll air it later, sure. But I don't know if they've been targeting our age group as much with it airing on TV. I mean, sure, they're going to have it on Friday nights instead of Saturday mornings than they kind of are, but.
Well, also, it's obviously a terrible idea to have it in the summer.
I forgot it was on Saturday mornings.
It was on Saturday mornings. Okay, two things I want to say. One, not that anyone on this podcast has said it, but. The common thread you see online is Nick was dumb to move it from Saturday mornings. And I have to keep saying this over and over. But basically, the reason Cora's ratings were better in book one than they are now is not because it moved from Saturday mornings to Friday nights. The reason the ratings are like way lower from 4 million to 1 million is because Nick's overall ratings are much worse than 2 years ago when book one aired, 2.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Basically, Saturday morning shows 2.5 years ago for Nick regularly pulled 4 million viewers. Now they're regularly pulling 2 million viewers. So it's not just Cora. Nick is not doing well, as are many networks, but Nick a lot especially. So it's really not the time slot. Nick has three major times that they are premieres, Friday nights, Saturday mornings, Saturday nights, and this is just one of them. I don't think there's a significant difference. Maybe you'd get 500,000 more viewers Saturday morning, but Nick knows that. And they look at things in context, or at least they should. And the second thing I would say is the summer. I'm not an expert on this. The conventional knowledge says that summer is when not a lot of people watch TV. This applies to broadcast television. However, Nickelodeon does not work like broadcast television. I think I would say that kids are more likely to watch summer TV than adults are, but it still could be a downtime for Nick. Nick never aired Avatar during the summer, really. They had a few specials, but they basically skipped the summer.
Yeah.
Until the finale, like the last week of book three, but they're like running them off by then.
Yeah. So they were done.
So I would say the biggest thing is the announcing it a week beforehand. Maybe summer's worse. I think they're planning on keeping it until fall. We didn't know that for sure because they literally never communicated with their audience on when Cora might be back, which was the reason I got so mad earlier, even before they aired it a week before after announcing it. So
I just think that Nick has a bad marketing culture within its marketing department. And I have studied marketing strategies before back in high school. And there's this blog that you can check out called Gaping Void. And he talks a lot about how the artistic side of marketing, how it goes into the thought process and how you have to maintain a culture within corporatism in order to market effectively. And I just don't think they're doing that. Like, I feel like everything I see from Nick is very much a copycat, and they're just not creating innovative ideas anymore. So
I think
Cora is part of a larger collapse within Nick.
Certainly Nick's not doing something right. I'm no expert on marketing. I think that it should be noted that children's marketing probably works a lot differently, but again, I don't know. Yeah. Nick has been functioning the same way for a while, and it seems like things are changing.
It's just not working anymore.
I would say that it's reasonable to conclude that given their incredible decrease in ratings. Mm-hmm. It's weird because the last factor I want to explore in this is that Nick, to an extent, has been on the forefront of cultivating the online presence of their show among all of television. Coronation, this social media program that they had for promoting the first two books of Korra, was incredibly innovative. And even if it's not necessarily the way you want it executed, they were doing something to try to harvest this zealous is a noun from the fandom. And I don't know if that word exists, but
you're looking for zeal.
Zeal. There you go. Thank zeal. You.
Thank you, Sharifa.
Thank you. Yes. So they're trying to do this, and it's really interesting. Who knows if it actually did anything? Who knows if it made them money? But they're trying something new, and they aired the book two finale a week before they were airing it, and that was interesting. And so, like, it's that in contrast to them not communicating with the audience on when Korra might be back at all. I've talked about this in the opinion piece, but you look at how MTV handles Teen Wolf. It's a really good analogy, because MTV is a network that cares a lot about their social media presence. A criticism of them would be, like, they maybe care about it nonsensically. Like, why does it make, that doesn't make them money? Why do they care about it? But they do. And so they market Teen Wolf and they engage with the fandom. But they also announced when this season of Teen Wolf was going to be airing, literally when the last season ended, right? So that's like a stark contrast to what Nick's doing with Korra. There's parts of Nick that are like on the forefront with handling the fandom, and there's parts that just have no idea what to do with it. Mm-hmm. So now they're fully into online territory, and we'll see what they do. I'm skeptical of this plan in giving them significant revenue. I agree with them that it will make them more money than airing Korra on Nick would, but I don't think this is necessarily the way to do it. I'm not sure how they would do it. I'm no expert, but yes.
I feel like this could make the money if they knew what to do with Korra, but they clearly do not, and it's just not going to do much. It's going to be, it aired, that's it. There's going to be no pomp, no circumstance.
The thing is that they're not doing anything innovative with it. All they're doing is sticking the episode on Nick.com and then some websites after. It's like, this is what they would have done anyway. This is what they did do for books one and two. And for book three, sometimes there's some reason they held the online part of it, but this is just like normal processing without the TV side.
What else could they do, though?
I would need time to think about it. I think, first of all, they should very clearly stream it on Nick.com. I don't know if they have that technology, but that would allow them to air commercials as it streams. Mm-hmm. Probably people wouldn't skip ads, would be less likely to skip ads if they're just watching it. And then by streaming it, it's still airing at a time, which could still, which still has the fandom passion while the show is airing, which is a good thing for it. So other than that, I don't know. This is a lot of uncharted territory. I think another option is just stick all the episodes up Netflix style online.
That's what I thought. Like, was thinking about how they could do that for book four, just put them all up at once, because Orange is the New Black is extremely popular and it only airs online, and they upload them all at once. And we've talked about this before, how Korra is really good if you're going to marathon it. Like, it's a good marathoning show. The plot's really, especially for books one and two, they really all run into each other.
I think especially book one, like, would have worked really well as a Netflix show. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I actually think this season works really well week to week, but mm-hmm. I also think it would work well. I fail to see how Nick would make revenue from throwing all the episodes up on Nick.com at once. Mm-hmm. Netflix makes money on that because they are a subscription service. Nick does not have a subscription service.
No.
I don't know.
They could make a deal with Netflix, but that's about all I could think of doing.
Mm-hmm. It would be very unprecedented for Nick. So the last question is, what does Nick do with book four? What we do know is that book four is going to complete production and we'll get it in some form. But other than that, we don't know.
It could be straight to DVD release, which would be saddening.
I think basically there's three options: straight to DVD, online in some form, or airs on Nicktoons. I think Korra is very clearly done with the main network at this point.
Yeah.
So we'll see. They did not clarify at Comic-Con. And speaking of Comic-Con, let's get into what we saw at the Comic-Con panel today. It was at 2:15 Eastern today. And I would say that it was an overall disappointing panel, considering the build-up that we got Thursday from this major press over the Nick pulling Korra story. Mel, what were your thoughts?
That was the most pointless hour of my life.
Of your life? Come on. No,
that's not that bad. It's just, 25-ish minutes of it was taken up by an episode that we were all going to see 8 hours later anyway. Then it was Nickelodeon-moderated online questions, pencil tests that were mostly things we'd already seen, mm-hmm. and a trailer that they didn't even put up online. You know, it seemed like a very pointless panel. Not that I expected a huge, like, I wasn't expecting, like, what we got. Was it, I guess it was last year with, you know, all this information about the next book and stuff like that, obviously, but it would have been nice to have a little bit more about the book now and just more than just 25 minutes of an episode that we were already going to see in 8 hours.
So I think
that was half the panel.
Yes, almost half the panel, yeah. I think it should be noted that given this panel airing coming during the season, they're kind of stuck regardless of even if Nick didn't have this the core to the online thing. Like, what are they going to do? Are they going to air, if they're going to air an episode, which they seem to like doing because they seem to have a hard time filling these panels, honestly. They aired an episode last season as well. They're going to have to air.
And like before, people have liked watching the episode, but it hasn't been one we're going to see in 8 hours.
Yeah, it was even less than that, yeah.
Watching the episode's fun for the people at the panel, though, because it's just you're in a room full of people watching this episode for the first time, so it only works for that group of however many people are in that ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, for anyone else who's finding feed or information about which is the majority of, because those, you know, the majority of the fandom is finding information about this panel online. Great, so 25 minutes of this 60-minute panel was you guys watching this episode.
Yeah, I would say I have two major criticisms, I guess, of the panel. One is that we didn't see anything on book four. I feel like they did concept art for book three, and I feel like that's just incredibly unexciting because we've already seen the characters. Mm-hmm. Like, they gave concept art for the Red Lotus group. And instead, we could have just done early concept art for book four, maybe people's outfits. Even that would have been very exciting.
The panels used to be back during Avatar, and they used to have, like, contest contests and, like, do all this fan art stuff. They were really exciting. But, like, this was just boring.
Wasn't there supposed to be a fan art contest?
There was a fan art contest. They didn't do it during the panel, though.
Oh.
Well, the one, I guess, defense I could find in not showing things from book four is that because we are in the middle of the season, it has the possibility of spoiling something. Just because these books do seem to be going together.
Yeah, so you'd have to be careful,
sure. I think most people's minds, so.
I can see their reluctance to want to do something before, but basically they're stuck then. So the other, I think this is the main point to talk about from the panel, is the way Nickelodeon addressed them pulling the episodes. So basically what they did was they spun it to be a major change to online. And they also...
That they chose willingly themselves.
That they chose willingly on purpose. And that they also addressed it very quickly, seemingly in 5 minutes. And I think this is... Going in, I had the worry that fans wouldn't be upset when Nick brought this up. And from what I can tell, they weren't. And there's just this culture at Comic-Con of just being super excited for everything. And it was very easy for Nick to just come in, spin this as a positive. They let the audience laps it up. They're happy to be there. They waited all night. They don't want to be upset. They want to be excited. Mm-hmm. And I think it's unfortunate. It's probably, I think this is also proof that they're trying to sweep something under the rug, because I think if they really were excited about this move, then they would open it up for questions.
I don't think they're happy about this move. I think Mike and Brian are probably, like,
right. So
they devastated. Their show essentially just kind of got canceled.
So I guess this is the question of who's right deciding the panels, and Nick or Mike and Brian. Mike and Brian literally heard about this news a few days ago. So it's not like they're in favor of this. Even if they say they're fine with it, they
have no choice.
If you see the fan art they put up to accompany their comments on
Yes, Brian put up a very sad Korra. Brian has been announcing things with Chibi Korra on Tumblr, and this was the, like, most sad Chibi Korra has been. And it is very upsetting. And also he reblogged something and said, well, that makes me feel better today. It was like some funny thing from a fan. So Brian's upset, obviously. I mean, as they they would be upset their show's been pulled from television. It's a thing that happens. It's something they had to deal with as creators of a TV show before. Brian knows about this from when he was the art director on Invader Zim. Invader Zim kind of got randomly pulled at the end of its run.
It
was a very good show.
It was a good show, and he kind of knows how Dominic is. They've done stuff like this before, but not that, again, that I disagree with them pulling. Like, I think that is the correct move.
Okay, we've established that fact.
Yes, but I don't even, what was I even saying? Who's running the panel? So I think Nick can easily step in and say, I don't think Brian is necessarily running the panel. I think
alien lizards are running the panel. It's all a big conspiracy.
I do not think
the most plausible.
So like the, I think, what's her name? Like Megan Casey, the Nick's rep to Nickelodeon. Nick has a rep for, representative for each show to coordinate with the shows. And so I think she probably had a lot of planning to do with it. She was the quote unquote moderator, and apparently she went up for like 1 minute and then was gone for the rest of it, which kind of makes sense given if they were expecting the crowd to be upset.
Maybe it's why the panel was so boring. They literally, Nick wrote it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Even last year wasn't this boring.
But I guess we should address specifics of what was there. I would say that first they addressed this. They said the quotes that I said before. This is part of a huge change in the industry. Digital download numbers have been huge in that way. The TV numbers. Mike and Brian said that. Oh, this is heartbreaking. Mike and Brian apparently said that they offer their apologies for moving the series to digital download, which is totally unfair for them to say. Like, that's not their fault. They didn't make the decision. Yeah, Brian says it's no secret Avatar is not the usual Nickelodeon fare. And they said that it's one episode a week. August 1st, August 22nd is the finale. They played the episode that we saw tonight. And then they answered questions that fans submitted online that they pre-screened. These questions were, quite frankly, awful. They had no value.
Some of them were funny.
Secret Tunnel.
They sang Secret Tunnel, which
That was funny.
I would say if there was not huge news to address, I would have found that amusing, but I find this not amusing at all, given the current situation. Mm. And I know not everyone agrees with me, but that's just me. And I think
at least it was something happy that came from the panel.
Yeah, I guess. At least we got like one good thing.
And the one answer to a question that was notable was Mindy Sterling and John Michael Higgins answering something really turning it into down a sexual route, and it was pretty funny. And so check out
that. I thought Seychelle's answer to her question about Cora and Asami was interesting, though. Perspective, where she said she liked the idea of how the show's direction went with not letting a guy come between two female characters, and they could easily be friends.
I think that's like the best answer we'll get probably. I agree that that's interesting. I mean, really, what you want asked at Comic-Con is there a possibility of going a romantic route with Cora and Asami? But I mean, if they're pre-screening questions, they're not going to answer that. So I don't know. Very disappointed with the questions.
Britt, please stop eating.
I'm not eating.
It's Mel.
I'm eating Skittles.
Mel always eats Skittles. Anyway, they then showed.
They changed the green Skittles.
Wow!
Riveting information.
Yeah, they showed concept art from Book 3. Then they showed pencil tests from Studio Mir for there were some fights we hadn't seen from later in the season. And then they showed a trailer from the second half of Book 3, which is not we don't have
supposedly.
Seen yet. And then we have pictures. The most notable thing in it is Cora in restraints. And like kind of like a straight jacket and a muzzle over her mouth as well.
That was kind of disturbing.
So we'll be looking forward to that
Hello,
in the coming
Clarice.
Weeks.
I'm gonna keep saying it.
Okay, that's good. I'm very constructive. But anyway, yes, that was the panel. Things you enjoyed from the panel?
Nothing.
The muzzle picture.
Oh my god.
Gave us something to speculate, at least. I mean, that's what I was hoping the panel was going to be, like, a way that we could, you know, stuff to be seen that we could speculate on, but no, it was a
big old what?
Waste of time.
Okay, Teresa?
Oh, I was just going to say that I enjoyed seeing the concept art, even though it's from the season that we're currently in, just because I like character design, but that's a personal thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was some interesting art there. I linked to it on my recap post, which I have on DF Tumblr and Island.
The evolution of Zaheer's hair.
Yeah.
Yes.
Basically.
And they've got art for the other villains hair. To know her. I mean, yes. Yeah, and hopefully we just got video of some of the line art things from Studio Mir. I assume someone's just going to have full video of the panel up soon, so I'll just link to it, to that when we get it. Yeah, any other things from the panel we want to talk about? No. Okay, no. Let's move on.
Not getting another one. Maybe NYCC.
Oh, yeah. But... Oh, yeah, the last thing was that they said there's no other big Korra panel at Comic-Con ever. But there might be one at New York Comic Con next year. Brian seemingly implied that Book 4 would be done before next Comic Con, like airing, which is interesting.
DF is going to New York Comic Con, right?
Okay.
I'm going to be there.
We'll see. That is closer for all of us, but we'll see. Except Jeff, but yeah. Okay. And you're in the middle.
Love everything. Anyway,
we could snag you.
Yeah,
snag the DF mobile.
In the DF mobile. Okay, let's move on to the episode, The Terror Within, episode 8, that aired on television tonight. It is possibly the last episode of Korra that will ever air on television. Yay!
Oh,
okay.
Just started off on a positive note.
I know. This episode was written by Josh Hamilton, directed by Colin Heck. And it was an interesting one. I would say something we've not, the type of episode we have yet not seen from Book 3. We are venturing into the plots, the action-y plots part of the book, and we'll see if they handle it in a way that has been on par with the rest of the book. Mel, give us your brief initial thoughts on this episode.
I really enjoyed it. I do think the pacing was a little strange. It did feel like something that could have easily been two different episodes that were kind of squished together into one, because there was kind of two very distinct plots going on between the acts. But I really enjoyed this episode.
Teresa, what do you think?
I really liked it. I have to say it's probably, well, it's not like the greatest Korra episode ever, even though we've been seeing, it's consistently good. It fits in with the rest of the season quality-wise. And I think it's one of the few Korra episodes that I was legitimately concerned while watching it. Like, my heart was actually pounding in beginning, like, the beginning fight scene, because I didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, everything else, was this the first episode that we didn't have any idea what it was about, or was that last week's?
Yeah, this was the first.
No, last week was also not leaks.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it felt very new. I liked just really being surprised by pretty much everything that came out of this episode. I liked it.
It was a bomb!
It should be noted we saw what was going to happen in the episode because it aired at Comic-Con early. So in that regard...
Well, I wasn't... I didn't keep up with that very
That's good.
Well.
That's good. I would have recommended that.
I didn't
that.
Either. So.
Good job. Okay. Sam, what did you think of the episode?
I didn't care.
Did you like parts of it? Did you like none of
Bowen
it?
Bowen was the only thing that mattered. He's funny. It just felt really season two, and I'm just so 500% done with all this Russian stuff.
I think that's a very valid point. I think it did seem book two-ish more than any other episode this season. Did you think it was too rushed? Did you think it was, you just not like this type of episode?
I just don't like this type of episode, and I don't like that they didn't air episode 9 with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, it needs another part. It can't just, you can't just end on that. You need something else, you know?
That was another interesting thing, though, about that whole pulling it, that they pulled the second half of the episode block.
It's like they want it to fail.
Well, no, that's illogical. But I think they certainly had a reason for keeping one. I don't really know what that reason is, but... I mean, you can kind of say, like, it sounds better if they're pulling it, but there's still one more tonight, and then it moves online, then, okay, the rest of them airing online, I guess. It's like an adjustment period.
I mean, there would be a better adjustment period if they told us what was happening, like, on the network.
They pulled the second one because this one ends on a cliffhanger and the other doesn't, and they're ridiculous in thinking that a cliffhanger is
I doubt that is their logic. But I don't know.
If they can make SpongeBob run this long and be this successful, then how hard is it to like what is their reasoning behind splitting up the Korra episodes? Like, why don't they take whoever's in charge of running SpongeBob? Because obviously that person's doing a really good job.
Well, so
and just SpongeBob give is them a to sophomore Korra. In high school
Let's
by
have
now.
Some cross.
So the thing is that SpongeBob is a show that the episodes don't have a direct connection to each other, which is the same as literally all other. This is an interesting point. I think we said last week on the podcast. Korra and Avatar are the only Nick shows ever, in animated Nick shows ever, to that Nick airs in order. Like, think about that. Like, this is
didn't they air Danny Phantom in order?
I think they must have aired it out of order somewhat.
Yeah, they like I remember when Danny Phantom was happening. Aired episode 6 of season 3 first before anything else from season 3.
Nick just likes and doing this, like, we think this will be good here, even if it doesn't make sense, but,
okay.
But it's just such a different type of show. SpongeBob, they can just air episodes, they can air repeats, they're whatever. Korra, I think Nick thinks they can't air random repeats because it only makes sense in the context of the plot, so they don't air repeats, and I don't know. It's just, it's much different for them to handle. Britt, what did you think of the episode?
It was a pretty good episode. It's not my favorite of season 3, but it was still, it did feel kind of season 2-y. It was definitely a transition episode, and I hope we don't have a string of transition episodes. But it furthered the plot along, and the plot was interesting, and I was interested, and I liked the villains a lot, and the fight scenes were pretty good. So it was a decent episode. Decent.
Okay. Yeah. This is a weird one, right? It does seem like multiple episodes in one. I think the first half of this episode is extremely good and is very unique. I think the whole entire fight scene in the second/first act is really interesting and well done and not something they've done before. I think that the humor scenes in this episode are extremely well done, as would be expected from a Josh Hamilton written episode. I think that's I think this episode's a good example of pacing isn't everything. This episode has quote unquote bad pacing. We change things very quickly. We go through many disparate things in the episode. Happens very fast, but it doesn't make it a bad episode. We can still have a good thing that's a good episode that's fast paced. I think this was good, possibly very good, maybe even close to excellent. It's hard to tell because so many different things happen. I think the latter half of the episode is somewhat boring. The whole investigation of Ai Wei, basically everything that happens after the fight scene ends, I think is the most boring stuff we've gotten this season so far, which is not good.
Snore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was good. I think that this somewhat assuaged my fears that once we got into the plot stuff this season that we would go back to book two. We did go back to book two in terms of type of episode, but I would say that this would be one of the this would be the fourth best episode if this was in book two. Like, this was much better than most of book two.
It was a drastic drop in quality compared to the rest of what we've been seeing.
I agree. Yes. I think this is worse than episode 7, but I think that was just
good.
It was just an excellent episode. So I don't know.
Leaps and bounds above book 2, in my opinion.
I think we need context for the rest of the season. If this is the worst episode in the season, then the season's going to be insanely good. So we'll see. Let's get into some specifics. We start with a lot of the type of stuff we've been seeing this season. A lot of like slower paced character interactions and humor. Korra and Bolin are sparring with the twins. We get some humor with Bolin here. We get Korra being good at metal bending instantly. Does that annoy everyone that Korra is just suddenly good at metal bending?
No, Korra is good at everything physical, so it makes sense she should be good at metal bending.
I think it's probably going to annoy a lot of people.
Well,
I feel like if Korra is going to be bad at any of the sub levels of bending, it would be lightning.
Yes,
because she doesn't have like the control and the
interesting
calmness. But I think metal. Like if you think about Toph and then you think about Korra, like it doesn't surprise me that Korra would pick it up.
You've sparked the hearts of all the Korra fans, Teresa, with the prospect of Mako teaching Korra lightning bend.
Oh, stop
No, that's not what I was going for at all. Oh. No. Do not.
Nobody cares.
But there are many Macora fans that care. That seems like something the show will do soon at some point.
I'm not endorsing Macora.
I think they will do that in book four, but anyway.
Oh, no.
Maybe it's something they could do as friends, and they won't end up making out at the end of it.
Oh, but it'll totally have sexual tension in it, Brad, and everything.
Stop it.
I would rather they bring back Azula and have her teach Korra lightning bending than have
ancient
like
Azula.
Grandma Azula she's comes like... in.
She redeems herself.
Yes, that's how Azula is redeemed.
It's her redemption.
She has to wait 70 years before she redeems.
By teaching the Avatar lightning.
Here's
bending.
Your chance.
Okay.
Here's your.
Girl. Yeah. Any thoughts on the Bolin? Bolin and Korra sparring with the twins. I think there's some. The
Bolin
twin
is funny.
Bolin is funny.
I think Bolin is funny, and I think he's gonna learn metal bending in like the finale, and it's gonna be like epic.
I wanted him to get at it though. I'm kind of upset that they have him struggling with it.
I think it makes sense. He's not very. It's not like not everybody in the show could be a super bender, so someone has to struggle.
It is refreshing. In a show that has people excelling at bending all the time, it does seem. Refreshing to have someone struggling with something.
And it,
but why does it have to be him?
I know. Bolin always.
It's with his personality.
Yes. So I think next is the best scene of the episode, and one of the best scenes of the season, and one of the best scenes in Avatar Korra history, which is the entire dinner scene. And this is the second dinner scene we get in Zaofu, and it's the second excellent dinner scene we get in Zaofu. I don't know how they do this, but it's like the same thing as in the Metal Clan episode 5. But here we get... mostly the Bolin and Opal scenes involving all this dialogue with Kale, which is just excellent.
We'll always have Kale, which is from Kale. Casablanca, which means they're never going to see each other again.
Don't say that!
Bolin's which is kind of die. Annoying because they keep throwing these
I don't think
women at Bolin and then...
Yeah,
like, I just want one good ship on Korra to like survive on
Jin Kai?
That's my hope. I feel like that's going to be the last one standing. Honestly, I'm putting my money on Jin Kai.
Tenza and Tenzin will get a divorce.
No, they don't count. It's pretty canon. I mean, like, that is, like, set in stone.
They're married and have, like, 5 children. That better be set in stone.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
Could you imagine if they just got, like, divorced?
Oh, my God. That would, I don't think
that would. I would cry.
I mean, Mike and Brian do, like, drama. Like, maybe they just go through a divorce and look for it. Yeah.
That's
not gonna happen.
So we get Bolin and Opal talking about Kale, and it's just incredible. And then we get Varric saying, "Can I give you some relationship advice, kid?" to Bolin, and Bolin says, "Oh no." And then that's the last we hear of that of the episode, and that's incredible, and I love that. That was just so funny. We get Varric's Airbender Finder, which is great and so random, and it's.
She has to airbend into it for it to work.
Of note, I think all of Varric's dialogue in this episode was A+. Great job with Varric.
It was very funny.
All of it was funny.
Voice actor has a great sense of timing.
John Michael Higgins is excellent.
Just fantastic.
I think he's leaps and bounds above the other voice actors on the show, maybe except for PJ Byrne.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Just so, and Allie will get upset at me if she was to listen to the podcast, she would say Jana Varney. But
Jana Varney, what?
And then she'd like rip 3 phone books in half.
Allie cannot rip 3 phone books in half. Come on.
Don't be mean to Allie when she's not here.
We can be mean to Allie when she's not here. Other stuff in the scene.
Compliment your strength because she is Korra. It's just don't mind. Continue.
Bolin or Mako randomly says that he hates sitting down here, and first of all, Mako getting the bad part of the table, that's great. I love it.
Noted.
I love it. And Ai Wei says it's because you're sitting next to me, and he says no, and he's I can tell you're lying. And this is a brilliant scene. This 10-second exchange is brilliant because it's funny, it's gets Mako relevant in the scene, which he wouldn't be. And it introduces Ai Wei back into the plot, which is necessary for later. Like, it accomplishes so much in just, like, 10 seconds. I don't know. Just brilliant writing.
I thought it was good. Like, I liked the dinner scenes. I just like awkward dinner scenes in general, but this was good.
Brilliant writing in this dinner.
This is one of the better transitions that we've gotten.
It's just boom, boom, boom around the table, but it's done so well. It's the same thing as episode 5, I'm telling you. And then we get Sue saying, "Here's to Opal, she's leaving." And
my baby.
And then
that was really sweet.
And we get a sad shot of her in the blimp going up, or the airship. And she's like waving everyone and like
sad. I liked that her brothers were like crying when they said goodbye.
Except for Skrillex, he looked annoyed, but her brothers were crying. I was like, yay, family love.
And I don't know, Opal. Okay. Oh, we should talk about Opal's facial expressions in the exchange with Bolin earlier in this scene.
Very strange face.
They are very.
It's like Korra's face when she was on the ship.
It's just awkward.
I don't think it's awkward. I would describe it as suggestive expressions.
But like an awkward suggestive, like she doesn't know how to flirt.
We'll always have kale.
I'm sorry, we'll always have kale. She doesn't take it.
I compare Opal's face in that scene to this one Asami face in episode 2 of the season, which is the same type of thing. I don't know. They seem to be really intent on animating female characters this season having a smoldering look. No, I don't really have a comment about this, but
too. Like, it was like a second or two longer than you thought it was.
It was like she kept the look. Yeah, it just wasn't this random thing. It was like noticeable. It was odd. But yeah, I don't know. And I really...
She didn't even blink, and that's what made it weird. Because it was like, did it freeze?
She needed to, like, smile or something if she did it,
you know?
There
needs to just be some sort of movement.
She wasn't committing to anything with that face, because she was, like, half smiling, but her eye, like, it was...
It was very cute.
The biggest discussion of this episode.
Opal is...
Opal's face.
Can we talk about how Opal is very attractive? And she's great. No.
We can't talk about that.
Okay. We all already know that. We don't need
to. She's adorable.
What's next on the outline?
next.
Wait. Did we point out that Korra and Asami are sitting next to each other?
Korra and Asami are sitting next to each other. Nothing happened, but they were sitting
next to each other. I'm glad we pointed that out.
Okay. And Mako is at the other end of the table, aka representative of what should happen. Anyway, next is the Red Lotus coming. Into the city, they kind of randomly appear, which is odd and seems bad, but then they address it, so that's fine. Pabu starts getting upset.
D. Bradley Baker is Pabu, right?
Yes, he's everyone.
How can he do that?
I don't know. They probably enhanced it.
I mean, I can make some pretty weird noises. I don't know about you.
Yeah, but you're not a grown man.
Yeah, Britt, you're a tiny girl. Like, she's like... Come on. And Sue... I do not mean offense. Korra's in...
The fact that I'm a family girl... A tiny girl is not offensive. It is a fact of life. Okay.
Korra in pajamas. Thoughts on that?
She actually has them.
It's good because last time we saw her sleeping, she was in every single piece of clothes.
Oh yeah, this is in...
including her boots. So.
In Voice in the Night, yeah, she gets woken up by guards and she's just randomly wearing everything. I don't understand.
That was a good dream. No, it wasn't.
Including her boots.
Was that a dream? I don't even remember anymore.
No, but then she woke up and still had
She like pet Naga and we're like, why are you just lying on top of your bed?
Why are
fully
you
clothed?
On top of your bed?
Yeah. You gotta be ready for anything.
In your clothes.
Thoughts on Korra with her hair down here?
Love it.
It's nice.
She's beautiful.
Her hair finally makes sense in physics.
When physics?
In physics.
When
with
physics?
I don't know.
When physics.
So Korra gets taken. Oh, I have
she
a
got
good.
Teased.
I have a good observation. Not teased. She gets tranquilized. I have a good observation about the scene. So they break into. They like cut. What's her face? Minghua cuts hole in the window, and they send the dart, and they get Naga, and then they send it in, and Korra sees it happening and reacts to the dart being thrown. But because Korra responds aggressively with firebending, she does not deflect the dart, and she still gets tranquilized. If she instead used airbending or waterbending, she could have very easily repelled the dart.
That's a her problem. So, and her Naga died at the end.
So my point is that this is a flaw with Korra's character. She did not get tased. She's not able to use defensive fighting skills, I guess, evasive maneuvering or defensive. She's just way too aggressive, and this came back to bite her. And this is the type of thing. The season's just very good with all the small details, and I think this was something. Earlier in the episode, another small detail was Bolin sends like a tiny rock at one of the twins when sparring with him, and it hits his forehead, mm-hmm. and it's like very obvious foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because it was a comedy thing, and then
it comes back into play later. Yeah, I think that one was maybe slightly, it was just like slightly too obvious, but the small details are there. I think it's just very good. So the core gets taken, Mako and Bolin go to fight them. Core fans will note that Mako gets very upset. And
as does everyone.
As does Bolin, so I don't know. So then the metal guards come, and interestingly, they get out of this metal case that they're putting with, What's his name?
Gazan,
yeah.
No, that's not right. Is that right?
Wow. I think that's right, yeah.
10 points to me.
Him lava bending to escape the metal entrapment. What do you guys think of this type of thing? Metal bending to get out of it.
I think it's pretty smart. The floor is literally lava.
Was that the part when, like... Oh, no, there's a part later where, like, the lava bending animation, like, actually made me gasp in real life.
Well, the first time he did it in the show is really crazy, but...
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we actually saw this happen. I think we kind of saw it from Lin and everyone's perspective. Because they, like, basically what was happening is those sheets on top of
them. I mean, what do you think of the concept of it, you know? Lava to escape the metal.
It's unconventional. It's unconventional.
Doesn't really make any sense, but I don't...
Are we trying to argue that... What Ali was trying to argue that it doesn't make sense because it was firebending, but we like came to the point that
hot earth didn't we? Because it's liquid earth.
That's what I was agreeing. I'm just trying to figure out. That's what Dylan wants to know.
No, I'm not. I'm not questioning lava bending. I'm questioning this use of lava bending to break out of the metal entrapment.
Again, unconventional. It was very strange the way it ended up working out. But you know,
it was not. It didn't seem like something they planned out very well, but it made sense with, like, the villains to not...
Well, I guess the concept was that, okay, that they surround themselves with lava like a moat, and then they're by themselves on this little island, keeping everyone else away, which that I get, but...
Breaking news from @actual_Tenzin on Twitter. This is this guy who's role-playing Tenzin, but, like, as a frat bro, and it's pretty funny. Warning, 18+. So he posts this picture of Korra taking, like, the medicine, and it's like, Korra, quit being a blank, like, a wuss, and take one more shot. Implying Korra is drinking.
That's not really that funny.
I think it's...
That's not even breaking news.
I think
it happened, like, 2 hours ago.
Back to the podcast.
Back to a regularly scheduled podcast.
Then, can we talk about how much of Korra's butt we got to witness?
I mean, we saw a lot of Korra's butt today.
Thoughts on that? She
was passed around, like, a...
It was a hot potato.
It's
a fact.
Okay, good.
Potato Korra. The end.
Continuing. So what ensues after they break out of this metal entrapment is the most interesting idea for a fight sequence I think I've seen maybe in Avatar Korra history. It's this idea of like a standoff, them being in the middle surrounded by lava. They have people on the outside trying to get them, but at the same time, Zaheer is taken out of this middle by these guards, so he's off fighting to the side.
I kept forgetting about him.
Yeah, that is, yeah.
The guards were actually doing a good job. They won, like, almost won the fight.
Yeah, great. I wanted to tweet
that. The first time guards have been useful.
I wanted to tweet out that
guards weren't the light.
These guards are so much more useful than the White Lotus guards. Yeah, like, come on.
Don't insult Howl.
Howl is one of many, but yes. And so...
He's in the Southern Water Tribe. He's not part of...
He's probably still there, yeah. What ensues is, although there's Korra's not there, so what reasons they have anymore for being there?
He goes wherever she goes.
I know, right? I didn't include Howara in my shipping poll a few weeks ago. That was a big mistake.
How dare you?
So I think the reason I think this fight sequence is super interesting is because we don't really get a standoff like this. We get a standoff in, like, the chase... and in Avatar and stuff like this, but this is like three individual benders in the middle with unique things that they have to try to get around, and they're like supporting each other. They're fending off these while still trying to like hold off Korra's body, like they're trying to stay there and fight instead of like running away. And it's just extremely, extremely interesting dynamic. Agree?
It was a lot more complicated. Yeah. It was a lot more complex than the standoff and the chase.
Yeah. Yes.
I feel like if by comparison, the chase was like, we're all going to literally stand here and then everyone just attack at once and then it was over. Like this was, it felt like an actual like battle, a short one and a small, you know, small sized one, but.
There was
more strategy.
There was like planned diversion here. Ultimate plan to deal with it there, so it was handled a lot more organized than the chase.
I think it was just very well done. I think Colin's storyboarding team is just very good. Like they also Colin directed the Metal Clan, and I think they're just the storyboarding team. Maybe it's just because they're on Twitter, they're on Tumblr, and I'm interacting with them, but they seem really competent right now at storyboarding these fight scenes. I think in the process of this fight scene, we get to see Izami in her PJs. Thoughts?
Why does she wear makeup when she's asleep?
Was she wearing makeup?
Yes.
Because she's probably too lazy to take it off before she goes to bed. It happens. But,
like,
her pajamas were very involved.
Yeah. I mean, I think...
She looked...
They're kind of, like, fancy, but I think they're still functioning pajamas. I think that was fine.
It's a nightgown.
She clearly put on a robe as she ran outside.
What is the criteria for functioning pajamas?
Well, I'm just, like, in contrast to us thinking, like, from the panel, just seeing pictures that it was more like lingerie, it just seemed like a nightgown here.
It was just a real fancy nightgown. It's funny, though, because literally everyone else was in tank tops, and she was like, nope.
She's all fancy dressed up, yeah. We hear Ming or Pilei.
Pilei? Is it like. Pilei? I don't even know.
I think it's Pilei.
Pilei.
It's Pilei.
I keep screwing it up.
I thought it was Pilei because of the allusion to.
Yeah, the goddess.
The goddess Pilei, but. Which it probably still is, but I think it's Pilei.
Mm-hmm.
Pilei. Yeah, let's go with that.
Didn't the announcer guy for the previously on say her name?
He did. I don't remember how he said it.
I don't remember how he said it.
The important thing is she's called a combustion bender by Sue, I think.
We're bending
explosions. I don't like that.
I don't understand why she would be a combustion bender.
There's still no explanation.
That's like the simplest way to say that concept, but
yeah.
Was she also a firebender though?
She has to be a firebender.
To be a firebender to do that, because it said with combustion man he firebends.
Did he firebend?
I don't think we see him firebend.
No, he just used his third eye chakra.
Based on our
that just threw me off when she like, you know, dissipated a fire. Blast that had been sent her way by Mako.
Did she?
Firebend? Yeah.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
She, like, spun and it went out in a circle and it was...
Yeah, so she seems like she's firebending.
But I've never actually seen her produce fire with her hands. She's only...
Well, Combustion Man didn't do that either, but he was said to be a firebender, so...
When you get that tattoo, do you lose the ability to firebend except for, like, that little spot in your forehead?
Well, it's interesting because that spot in your forehead is... It's a reference to... It's called the third eye chakra in your head.
Yeah.
And that's, I assume that energy is what they're using to perform this explosive firebending. But it's interesting because we don't see Combustion Man or her producing firebending any other way.
Yeah. But anyway.
We don't know if that's a choice or not.
Combustion bender, etc. Sue tells Bolin to take the shot. Bolin hypes him up by saying it's Bolin time. They have fun with Bolin's dialogue.
Yes, they do. I'm glad.
Sometimes I think it's a little too casual for the situation, but...
I think a lot of times when Bolin and Mako are talking to each other, it seems a little casual. They say bro a lot, and it's like,
bro. I did like watching them, like, fight together. I know that we've seen that before, but, like, I know Jeff is usually the one who talks about the fight scenes, but it was just very fluid, and the animation of them playing off of each other... through the fight scene was just really cool.
Yeah, I always enjoy when you've got two different types of benders working together fluidly in fight scenes.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. We see Sue and Bolin go. Sue holds her. They go. They like drop from the top. Sue holds off Zahir while Lin takes Korra up. After Bolin knocks out Pilei. play. I completely forgot how we said what he said. Anyway, in the meantime, though, we get really interesting dynamics of them kind of, like, Minghua and Kazan kind of seeming as, like, support units to, like, the tank in the middle of Puli. And it seems like their fighting dynamic's interesting. She seems almost more of a leader in terms of their group fight dynamics. I don't know if it's hard to tell because Zaheer wasn't there, though. He was off to the side. And also we get a sense of her being extremely tall.
Didn't they say she was
in the panel? Eight. They said she was 6'8", apparently.
Oh, God. And Cora is 5'7". Why isn't she so tall?
For reference,
why
Cora
is no one short in this show?
Cora is 5'7", and Mako is 6'2", according.
But it doesn't look like that way. She doesn't look 5'7", though. She looks like 5'5", 5'6", and there's no way Mako's 6'2". Like, just visually.
I guess it does explain why Jenora looks so tiny, though. Because she really does. I was like, she's supposed to be 12? Well, look at Aang. I mean,
Aang was tall, yeah.
He was like
Aang was tall, Tenzin tall. Looks tall, you know, yeah, just from, like, a visual. But, like, there's no way Korra and Mako have a 7-inch height difference. Anyway. Me and Teresa were discussing this earlier, but there's just no way. He's 6'2". He's 5'10".
Were we I don't remember discussing that. Are you sure it was me?
It might have been. It was Delaney. I'm sorry. It was Delaney. Okay. Anyways. I got
like, did we?
Delaney,
I agree,
me and Delaney were talking about this. And I just think they need to allow people in this world to be short, okay?
Mako is 5'10", at children. Most.
Maybe 5'11". Just let it be. Just
yeah, I mean, Brian
let
even...
Let them be tiny. It's okay. It's okay.
There's even a comment, Korra's not actually short. Like, she seems everyone's just tall around her, says Brian, so...
Well, I mean, that does kind of fit with, like, if we're drawing parallels between the Avatar world and our world, I mean, over the centuries, people have gotten generally taller and, like, bigger than you were in the past. So everyone was short, you know, kind of short in Avatar. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
Although, but I don't know if it would make much of a
difference. Worldwide is still only 5'4".
Oh my God, Britt. I get it.
Anyways, moving on. I just think they should be more accurate and just be honest with themselves.
I don't think 5'7"'s that tall, though. That's average height for a grown woman.
Yeah, it's pretty average, but she's not.
Okay,
she's
anyway. Yes, that's fascinating. As this.
Let's move on. This is not important.
Other thoughts on the fight scene here?
No. Well, I have thoughts on the entire situation at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I thought they were going to blow the top off and escape that way.
Well, I thought it was interesting, and I guess I didn't think about it till later, that they wanted her alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the early speculation from people was that, oh, they want to assassinate Korra, but they went through an awful lot of trouble to get her out of there, mostly unscathed. So
they want to use her blood in a ritual to bring back Satan.
Batu.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I have a question. What do people gain from Ratu, though? Nothing. Batu, excuse me.
It would be very illogical for these villains to bring. It was already illogical enough for incredibly bad Unalaq.
Like, what do they want with Korra?
Yeah, so you know? We don't know what they want with Korra. They do. It is a good note that they're taking her alive. Also, I think Britt, the thought of why can't they just play just blast off the top is interesting, but I think they just, I guess, have no way of getting out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they have an airbender.
Yeah, but it seems... I don't know if he can support all of them, I guess.
All of them.
Yeah.
Everyone is going to hang.
And then the earthbender could bend himself out. Waterbender could use some help. And Pele could look at the
dangly,
floor.
Those dangly monkeys. Those toys. And they're just flying out of the...
You know, this is the problem. They should have just planned to blow the place up and then just had somebody come in with, like, an airship. And they had no escape driver. They had no escape driver.
Do they even have any friends beyond the four of them?
Well, Aiwei.
Okay, yeah. By the way, I didn't think he was even going to be important. He's going to be the same amount of significance as, like, Piandao's butler. Like, just he's just there. He bows sometimes.
Well, that's why it was shocking.
He's got a cool piercing.
Well, yeah. But...
By the way, I think it wasn't. The way they structured it, I don't think it was shocking. Like, I think they were heavily hinting throughout the entire episode.
Yeah.
So then we get the... it's the Shirshu toxins, apparently, which were...
They tased her with
them. Which were... tranquilized her with, excuse you. And which I think is a nice in-universe reference. apparently, they quickly determine they must have had inside knowledge, and Sue reacts pretty violently to this.
Her Beifong was showing.
It's the second time someone's tried to capture the Avatar using Shushu toxins.
Well, of note, fun fact, yeah. Anyway, Sue, I think this is the first of many interesting Sue things, Suyin things we need to talk about.
She was reacting.
She reacts very violently and like a dictator, honestly.
Maybe she is a dictator.
She seems like a dictator, honestly. Next, we have Ai Wei interrogating people, some guards, then Varric. Okay, here's the most important thing to talk about in the episode. So, Varric goes through his entire itinerary, what he was doing while this was happening, and he mentions that for an hour he was checking for ticks because Lyme disease is a serious threat. And while this was funny, we need to talk about the ramifications of both ticks and Lyme disease existing in the Avatar universe.
And also there are Jeeps.
There are Jeeps.
Why are there Jeeps?
That's later.
Okay, we'll get to that later. Okay.
Oh my God, it's related.
Ticks.
Dylan, I was trying to make a point.
Well, when do they bring up Jeeps? I don't know.
At the end of the episode.
Oh, because
she gives her keys.
She's driving a Jeep-looking car, sure. Well, okay.
They said Jeep.
Did they actually say Jeep?
They said Jeep.
Oh, yeah, well, Jeep. That's problematic.
The more you say that word, the less it sounds like
which
the real
is interesting
word
because...
and just like a cricket noise.
Yeah, but Jeep is a brand. It's not really
yeah,
a
it's a brand.
Car.
Okay. Let's start
with
ticks.
Are they paying someone?
We'll go three things we need to talk about. First, let's start with ticks. First of all, ticks are not a hybrid animal.
No, they're an insect.
They also have bears.
Beetle ticks.
Also, we previously did not know ticks existed. Okay, that's fine on its own. But Lyme disease, we have never heard of a real world specific disease like this existing in the Avatar universe.
This means they have Lyme borealis burialosis bacteria. And I'm just like, no.
We need a hour long discussion on the bacterial composition of the Avatar universe.
Explain us everything about this and why it's
wrong. Okay. Let's see.
I mean, could it could happen though, right? Like they could just have the same bacterial composition.
Yeah, they could
us.
Have genus borealis or Borealia. Sorry,
Borealis. I guess the real question is: do you think they really thought about this?
No,
or
I think that's
just wanted to give Varric a funny line.
I think that they're becoming way more casual with these real world references.
And do they have strand of Borealia do they have?
It could maybe Varric is so concerned because
or do they have because I
because it's a super serious
Lyme disease outside of the U.S.
of.
Is like really different. Like I don't even like because it comes from the deer tick usually, which means they have deer.
Do we want to talk about the fact that Varric was checking ticks for a whole entire hour?
Yes.
Yeah,
like
do you think Julie was helping?
Obviously.
Do you think that's kind of a sexual
Julie
thing?
Julie had to do the thing.
Yeah.
Julie came out from under the table earlier in the episode.
And she was scrubbing his feet with the rock. Did you guys see that when
yes,
he was collecting the rocks?
Yes,
that was
yes,
so
yes.
funny.
Julie They're does, having this, does the thing.
Maybe he'll die of Lyme disease.
Well, yeah, that's the tragic end for Varric.
He's the
he
one character that
this unexplained real world disease.
And apparently Varric filmed the entire thing so he can show them proof, which seems like
yeah, that, which is furthering my opinion that
he already has Lyme disease.
Oh, you're saying it was like
a blank tape,
a relations tape, yes,
a grown-up activity.
Some reason that makes it worse.
I know, right? It doesn't make
it worse.
Fanfic
it's
is
probably already happening. Someone's probably writing it right now.
The fanfic is that they agree to see what Varric has filmed to prove his innocence, and then everyone just like gets disgusted watching this.
That's the real reason that screenshot that we got to see from this episode where they all look shocked and
yes,
disgusted. That's actually what that's from.
Exactly.
Yeah, they just spliced it together because they were like, they are Pepper Potts and Tony Stark, so.
Yes. And next we see Ai Wei saying this guard is lying, they have to search his house. They find this evidence. This
that
all
guard
is...
was really cute, by the way.
Ooh, really?
It's like a combination of Bolin and Mako.
That's the type of character they base off someone in the crew. So I wonder if they did. We get Detective Mako being all suspicious after they find this evidence. Detective Mako is pretty annoying. Not gonna lie.
He's not really good detective.
Look at these scuff marks.
Yeah.
I liked Detective Mako in what was that season?
The Sting.
Book two
the
episode.
Sting.
The Sting. I liked him in that one. because he was like actually interesting and like stuff was happening, but this was just like
that's before he was Detective Toolbag.
Yeah, this was just thrown together. This was not like a facet of his personality, or they were maybe they were just trying too hard. But I was like, meh.
I'm so frustrated. Like, the whole thing, this whole season, I've actually enjoyed Mako, and then this episode, I don't know what it was. Just like I slowly have fallen back into the old ways, which is just hating Mako.
I didn't necessarily hate him. I thought he was annoying, though.
Well, I started to strongly dislike him with a burning passion.
With a burning passion.
With a burning passion. There's a firebending joke in there.
Right. So then Varric pops up again and says, we get, I think, another great Varric dialogue, him talking about how if he were the person, he would have planted it and then to prove their guilt. And it's Mako's like you do with me. And he's like, exactly. And I think I still think
Varric is going to be involved with this somehow, just because it's too perfect.
I don't think they'd rehash that.
Yeah, I think this is like a really good way of handling a character who was like sketchy and kind of a villain in the past, and now he's like just there, and it's like acknowledging it, and he's neutral. Varric acknowledges it, and he's using it kind of to help in this case. It's just really funny. And then they go to the Aiwei's house, and Bolin says that he's invisible.
Because we had to have that one bit of stupid
thoughts on Bolin. Thoughts on Bolin saying he's invisible.
I did like the awkward silence with Mako. Like, cause sometimes I feel like they just do the awkward silence so well. Like, especially this season, it's been so good. Oh, I love that. I liked it.
This is the awkward silence season.
Yeah, it is. Book 3, silence.
Yeah, book 3, oh, book 4, silence. Wow, yeah. It's going to be like Doctor Who, yeah.
That sounds
the silence
it's the
of
end
acts.
Of everything.
Yeah. Book 4, silence. So then they investigate the house. They find a secret bookshelf. This is pretty stereotypical.
He's Batman. Wei is Batman.
Aiwei. But yes.
Aiwei, excuse me.
I think he's named after Ai Weiwei, which is like a really famous artist, but anyway.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking too. That was my first thought.
High five.
Good, high five. They confront him when he comes in. Bolin says that he thought Aiwei was he called and said he was in the shower, and he said it in a woman voice. And then we get this extremely existential line from Bolin, which is maybe my favorite of the episode. He says, "I don't even know why I'm saying that. You know I'm lying, and you don't even sound like that." I think it's like perfect from Bolin to build up, because Bolin just says an incredible amount of stupid things this episode, and then he just gets he lampshades it at the end, which I think is great.
He's just like whatever. I feel like Bolin is like very conscious of like the way he comes off, and sometimes he's okay with it, and sometimes he's like, that was just dumb.
Start?
I would say that this is a good example of his like inappropriate comedy, like inappropriate timing comedy, as opposed to earlier in the fight scene when he's like, "Oh, that guy's lava bending, which is cool, but not cool for us," or whatever he said. It was like not the time, and it didn't fit, because it took away from the seriousness of the scene. And it took away from the seriousness of his character, which I know there isn't much left.
Yeah.
But
they need to give Bolin something to do that's important. He needs to, like, lose a limb or something, I swear.
Lose a limb.
Wow, okay. Is this
he needs to give something important to do, like amputation. Like, what are you
Is this the start of an existential crisis for Bolin?
I hope he has an existential crisis. I think it'd be good for his character overall.
It would only make me love him more.
I don't know. I don't even know why I'm saying that, says Bolin. That's such an existential crisis type thing to say. Oh my god. Okay, and then Aiwei understands that they figured it out, and he says, "You have no idea what's coming for you, Avatar." Before he puts up a giant metal wall and escapes.
I'd be like. Are you coming for me? Because you came.
I have no idea. Bomb in his house.
Yeah, so then...
Oh my gosh, okay, can I just talk about the bomb for like 1 second?
Yes.
Did you notice how like they all ran down to see where he went, where Aiwei went, but it seemed like Asami didn't come with them. I thought she was like waiting in the house. And then when they all ran up and you could see Korra and Bolin and Mako, but you could not see Asami. So I thought that she just wasn't there. And then the bomb went off and I was like,
Asami died. She's dead. Legitimately thought that she either died or was gonna be like injured, and that was gonna be a huge plot point. Because then they would like go and she, but then Korra's like, oh no, I protected you with air, and Asami's magically behind me. But like, I was,
of course,
she actually was terrified that she was going to get horribly injured or just killed.
I think I would.
I don't agree with that. I did lose track of her as well. I then saw her on the ground.
I think she was just chilling in the house. Like, okay, guys.
Like, yeah, but then she just. I don't know.
Maybe she has PTSD against going in basements. My heart the last skipping. Time she went in the scary basement under a house, her father betrayed her.
I think that's a. Yeah, that's true. Last time she was under a house, her father. Yeah. I think there is a good point to be made that Asami was very underused in this episode. She didn't really do anything.
Asami's always underused.
Except for the beginning of the season.
In the future, it looks like she's going to be carrying Korra off from...
from something,
I think she's
going
to have some use, you know? So that'll be good.
Also, in the beginning fight scenes, I mean, there really wasn't much of an opportunity for her unless she got some sort of long-range weapon or, like, stole a car and started running over people. Like...
Well, it could have been.
She's a very close range.
That's combat. That's a good point.
She needs to pick up like the bow and arrow or something.
She could have been the one fighting Zaheer close range instead of the guards.
She could, you know, learn chi blocking. And...
that would have been cool.
Let's not
have ancient Ty Lee come back and teach her.
Oh my god, we need to stop bringing people back. Okay,
they could both be alive.
Didn't people point out that in one of the pictures we got from the panel where it was like a circus that like three of the girls looked like Ty Lee?
Could be her sisters.
Or I was
really, really old sisters.
They were young, so I was thinking daughters, because, you know, Ty Lee and Haru.
I assume that Ty Lee and the family don't age.
Yeah, they just, yeah.
Interesting, really a vampire.
The interesting thing, though, about him having this bomb in the basement is I feel like there's two ways it could have gone. On the one hand, he put it there himself for just such an occasion, or someone put it down there to keep him quiet for later. And he didn't know that there was a bomb in his basement.
Maybe that bomb was rigged to blow up his whole house.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not clear because if he wasn't caught, then what's the bomb going to do? Is it going to go off? Is it just going to go off at some point to hide the escape route anyway, and then he just stays there?
Yeah, it would have to blow up his whole. If it had blown up his whole house, it would be more.
I don't know. It was just a very strange thing. Like literally, she turned the corner. It was like, oh look,
yeah,
a bomb.
I don't know. We see. Oh, when Korra's trying to break through the wall, Mako's like, "Hurry up!" And she's like, "Back off, Mako."
That was a great line.
Yes. More.
That is my tone.
Yeah, more. I have
anti-Makora.
Makora fans will think that's Makora's
back
name.
Back off, Mako.
Back off.
In the quote lodge, I have a Bolin saying, "Shut up, Mako." I think, right, or something like that. This is one to add to that.
Go away, Mako.
This is Bolin, more telling off Mako lines to add.
You think I know the entire quote lodge?
This is good. I need to change it.
I just learned it.
I need to update it with back off Mako, obviously. Then bomb goes off. Sue and Lin come. Okay. Big discussion topic. Korra tells Sue that Aiwei, her close, whatever she calls it, was the one behind all of it. And Sue has these just incredibly shifty eyes. It's just like the most obvious thing.
I see you, Beifong. I see you.
So, like, what is the intent of this? So, there's two ways to look at it. What is the intent of it from Sue? Is she doing this on purpose? Is this supposed to be a subtle thing from her? And two, what is the intent of the show by showing us this?
I mean, it could easily be that she's evil. It could easily just be red herring, which we've seen them do before with villains. And it could just be she's really nervous because she trusted this guy and she knows they might.
Is that a nervous thing, though?
Suspect her. It could be a nervous tick. It could be.
I think if anyone's the red herring, Aiwei's the red herring. Because I think there's been absolutely nothing up to this point to suggest that Sue would
have anything to
do with Red Lotus.
Like, what does he have to gain? What would his motive be?
Well, here's my thing, I don't mean red herring in the sense that he's a false villain, because clearly he did help them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's a red herring in us wanting to think the show presenting in such a way, wanting the audience to believe he worked alone, but I don't think he did.
I don't think he did. I think Sue threw him. I think it would be very logical to think that Sue threw him under the rug, or threw him under the bus.
I think she did.
So I think my first thought when I saw this was the Sue shifty eyes is that the show's trying to give us strong hints that Sue is like in with the Red Lotus and that she actually did know about Ai Wei. So she has to force a reaction after this. Mm-hmm. And that we're starting to see the beginnings of Sue like being evil or at least like a neutral bad character like Varric.
The interesting thing, I guess, that throws a monkey wrench into this, though, that was that there was no guarantee she would go to the city. What does Sue have to do with the Red Lotus in that case?
What do you mean?
Well, there's no guarantee that Korra would end up in that city.
Opal started airbending. That's pretty significant. I know, but
so did. So
yeah, they didn't control that. Yeah.
Like they went.
It could have just been something they planned after she got there.
Regardless,
they went to Ba Sing Se too. Like she went to a few places. It wasn't. There was no guarantee that she would just go there as well.
Regardless of the overall, structure, if Sue is a villain, I think it's important. I think it's maybe more relevant to look at the possibilities of Sue's somewhat seemingly suspicious behavior. And I think there's one way to look at it in that they're trying to hint that she's evil. And I think the next way to look at it is that they are giving us, like, a false positive here. Because I think you can almost as easily construe this as... because all of her behavior after this is, while somewhat seemingly forced, is not obviously suspicious. So,
it just be personality. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is the show trying to throw you off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think we have enough information.
I did think from the beginning that Sue was suspicious, so I am sticking in that.
Oh yeah, Delaney sent me thoughts on this. My two cents, there are only two directions Sue can go. Epic Top Child Part 2, or we fall in love with her and we have an insane heartbreak betrayal and as Azuko/Azula with Sue and Lin. 60% of me think Sue is inclined towards the Red Lotus or helping them. 40% think she's sincere.
Yeah, I don't think she's sincere.
I would love Sue to be evil and then Opal and Sue to head it off and just...
But didn't they kind of already see that with Asami?
Yeah, so this is a rehash of Asami.
Yeah, it'd be like a rehash of Asami, but I guess maybe Opal joins her and she kind just becomes of evil.
Eska and Desna,
Opal could have been like sort of willing
to... So this would be the third child of evil parents who is like...
Well, in Korra, but then you gotta think about, like, Zuko and Avatar. What? Gosh.
Yeah, it's a
Dude,
lot.
Dude, like, Mike and
dysfunctional
have, like,
families.
Just have like family issues that they need to air out because there's a lot of family issues with the show and I don't understand.
Circle that Honoro doesn't have.
Honoro, yeah.
Daddy issues.
What's
or
the
mommy
problem?
Issues.
On...
We don't know who her mother is.
What's
no,
the problem? What's the problem on Tumblr? Says I'm glad they kept the Lin doesn't trust Suyin thing and had her be suspicious because that ending to episode 6 was lame. You don't say things like I see right through you and go over it with a fight and nap. I thought they'd drop it, but I was pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because Lin suspecting her is obviously something that would happen, but I think there's a big difference between. You know, sort of the petty crime and gang activity she was doing in the city and helping a very hostile and
lethal.
Scary organization to kidnap.
Yeah. Also, I've noticed that Lin was completely supportive of Sue after that one time when Lin said that Sue should take them at the lie test.
Mm-hmm. Which could be leading the audience then.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
In a...
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know what direction they're going with this. I think, okay. So then the other thing we have to talk about is, so first they say we're going to go after Ai Wei. Lin says, "Don't lecture me about jobs."
Don't lecture me about jobs. Me You've from ages 15 to 18, 19 rather.
So they decide no, it's not because Lin's very against them going after. But then Sue comes in the night. And says, "We have a car waiting for you. Go after Ai Wei. We have to jeep," which doesn't make any
jeep
sense.
Jeep TM,
yeah. So at Sarilis13 on Twitter says, "I like the ending of the episode when Sue is like, here's the key to your death. Now go."
Yeah, no, literally that was the very first, because we were talking about this when we got this info from Comic-Con, but literally Sue is throwing her at the Red Lotus. Behind Lin's back.
I think this is stronger evidence than anything that she's in with the Red Lotus.
Yes. I think I've mentioned my theory before that her friends in that apartment were the people who become the Red Lotus. Like, the one with the long hair that's sitting with her on the couch is Zaheer, and the dude who bends lava is the other dude.
Oh. That would tie in then how she got from, you know, minor gang activity to major awfulness.
Britt, that's actually, like, a really good theory that you brought up very casually.
I want to, like, find screenshots of that now and, like, compare.
Like, I mentioned this before, and you guys thought it was ridiculous.
But I don't remember you mentioning it, but yeah, that's a very, I like this. I think that's very plausible.
I'm like, really
hung up on this now. Over it.
Yeah.
Maybe she's the ringleader from far away. You never know.
She's the puppet master.
She meets the chick with no arms, Miwa, in the circus, or like when her traveling around.
We've trying to figure out who Sue's dad is. Is it Hama?
I mean, it could be. She's like, I have like an actual theory there. Dylan.
Yeah.
Okay, but like seriously, she traveled around. And how do all these people meet? They're obviously from different parts of the world.
That's a good point.
And she was the one traveling around.
Is that why there was circus concept art?
Yeah, Toph, like, let her
like, sit them off. Like, actually, one of them kind of looks like the here. Right.
Oh my god, it's all coming together. I don't know. I feel like we're onto something here. Good job, Britt.
Thank you.
Anyway. Got the ball rolling.
Any other thoughts at the end of the episode, on the entire episode, actually? Specific thoughts?
I like how she gave her Jeep, but Cora didn't use it.
Music.
Yeah, Corey just read. Talk about the music a little bit.
I don't actually have much to say. I was like noticing, especially this season. I mean, the music for Cora has been awesome throughout all three seasons so far, but I feel like I notice it more this season. Maybe it's just because I'm overall just more happier this season, so I'm paying more attention as a whole to the episodes. But like just the. That also, like, earlier I was saying how I felt, like, the intensity of the episode, and I was actually kind of nervous for the scenes where you're really supposed to be nervous for the characters, and the music had a huge thing to do with that, because the quick-paced strings and the drums and just was really, really good. Like, I want this season's soundtrack to come out for download or CD.
I like that they reused Cora's theme there at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Maga. Not in the Jeep, but, you know, running off to, you know, head right into a very obvious trap.
Yep.
So.
But no, yeah, the music has just been awesome this whole season. Music and animation are, like, glorious.
Good. Thumbs up. Yes. Okay, let's get to rating the episode. We have two. I'll preface it with two people that aren't here's ratings before to take some pressure off. Delaney gives this an 8, and Jeff says that was incredible. So sad to see SpongeBob follow immediately. What a contrast! And he gives it a 9 out of 10. Let's start with Mel. Context: 5 is an average episode of television. 10 is the best ever. Let's start with Mel. What would you grade it and why?
8.5. And why, right? I was like, why are we pausing? I mean, I still wasn't completely sold, and I don't even think it's pacing. I just think, like we said, it's like a book two thing where a lot of stuff was sort of smushed and rushed together. I do think these episodes could have been broken up. This episode could have been broken up into 2 episodes. That aside, I still liked the way everything turned out. I found it really interesting, and everything this season has been really
well. At the same time, we wouldn't like want it to be broken up into 2 episodes because
and I'm not saying it should be. I'm just saying the two acts of the episode felt
very different,
disconnected in tone. But that aside, you know, this is just completely on par with everything that's been happening this season. So,
Teresa, what would you give this out of 10, and why?
Oh boy, I'm out of practice of reading things. I'd say an 8.75. Not so much that, like, there was a lot wrong with it. I honestly didn't think there were any glaring issues. It just, obviously, we have seen better. I know that there can be better episodes, and I want to hold off from rating it too high because who knows what we're going to see in the future. But I think, like I said before, it's keeping with the quality of the episodes this season, which is really good quality. So yeah, 8.75.
Cool. Sam.
Sigh.
I thought you said five, and I was like,
So five is an average episode of TV, right?
Yep.
I'll give it a 6.5.
Okay, why?
Because it was average, but a little bit better than average.
Is it only above average because Ballin?
It was adequate. It definitely was a TV show that aired on.
This is every week that you're grading.
I don't know, dude. It's just okay. It existed. I didn't really care for it that much.
All right. And Britt.
I will give it a 7. If it's better than like average episode of TV, it wasn't great. If everything plays out correct, like plays out well, it'll be a really good transition episode. It's just kind of like a lot of whether or not this episode's really great depends on what happens later. But it was entertaining. Like, I had fun and enjoyed watching it, and I liked all the fight scenes, and yeah.
Cool.
It's like a B plus.
Oh, don't even bring the letter grades back. That's too confusing. I think I'm at an 8.5 right now on this episode. I think the biggest thing this episode does right is not doing anything wrong. There's nothing bad. There's a lot of, I think, and the positives that make it, 8.5 is a very high grade for me. The positives are, I think this is the most creative fight scene in Avatar Korra history. I think that the dinner scene in the beginning is one of my favorite scenes in Avatar Korra history. Just that it's good to go along with the dinner scene in 305. And I think that all the humor is incredibly good. And I think these far outweigh the positives of the second half of the episode being a little boring. So yes, we already got to our comments on Tumblr. I forgot a Jeff comment earlier from when we were talking about Comic-Con. Jeff brings us our, hold on, I forgot the name of this segment. Nick's Stupid Thing of the Week. Jeff has it for us.
But that's what that stands for. I was trying to figure that out, like, the whole first half.
I know. I'd ask him for it. Okay. So Jeff says, yet again, Nick's Stupid Thing of the Week strikes again, neutering what could have been an exciting and informative panel. Nickelodeon knew they would be eviscerated by fans if they allowed unvetted questions from the attendees, so they moved to enact this online question submission, from which they pulled the tamest questions imaginable. No audience participation allowed, but who can blame them for fearing bad press? This was simply the necessary consequence of earlier stupidity. Did last year's panel have fan questions? That's my point. I think last year's panel might have also had online.
They had both. I remember they did take audience questions.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure. Like, I'm almost like 90% sure they had audience questions.
Okay. Well, I agree that they couldn't really.
Yeah, because I do remember they cut off someone's question, and I remember like, because they're like, this has to be the last question or something like that.
I don't remember.
I do recall that happening.
Okay. But yeah, I agree with Jeff here. Had to happen. Unfortunate. I would say that is it for
Allie this never episode. Figured out how to leave a voice.
Oh, yeah. Well, Allie didn't. I understood she didn't want to. Oh, Mel, do you have any hidden Zutara off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head. 10 seconds. Let me think.
I mean, we didn't see any Zuko in this episode.
This is usually pretty involved.
We didn't see any Katara in this episode, so how could it possibly?
Well, one could argue. No, here's what's going on. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They hired the Red Lotus to distract everyone so that they would never have to be seen, you know, anywhere, and no one would say, hey, where's Zuko and Katara? No, we're too busy fighting the Red Lotus, so they could run off and have their secret midnight meetings.
So this entire, plot of the season is because to cover up.
I mean, Zuko's been known to hire combustion benders before.
It's all coming together.
It is all coming together.
Obviously taught the water arm lady how to be water arm lady.
Okay, yeah.
Committed their names to memory.
Minghua. Katara taught Minghua, and Zuko hired Pili. It's pretty solid.
Why does Gazan or Gazan or whatever the heck his name? Why is he there? He said like two words whole time. I feel kind of bad.
He drives the van, and he's an earthbender.
He's also
I just feel bad because everyone else. I feel like I'm more interested in the other three villains because they've actually spoken.
Him and Arms Lady should get together.
He did speak once, for the record, but yes.
Well, yeah, I know he did, and then he said, really, right now? in his car. He said, that was his best line.
He did say that. That's good.
He's the designated third wheel.
Yeah. Yeah. Right now. And his being able to do lava facilitated this fight sequence in this episode. So that's good, too. Okay. That's all for this week's podcast. I've been your main host, Dylan Ghost. I've been people, Mel, Britt, wow. Teresa, Sam.
That's all we are to you.
It's not all, because I always say that because I have the credits page open and the specific hosts aren't on the credit page. Technical directors, AJ Kevin Jarris, musical credit to you, Sheeta Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, McTripp, logo and banner by Kevin Dong, playing zone by Jake. Jeez. Contributors, Garrett, Sierra, Nick, Devin, and Lexi. And I didn't put Colin on this list yet, but Colin is also there.
So G-Money, Sierra, Mess, Nick at Night, Rudy, and Tabooty, and Coin. That is your nickname.
Are you sticking to Coin as his
all
nickname?
All you did
Sam?
Was remove one
you
letter.
You wrote down
did
Coin.
Did he request
so
his nickname?
No, you have to have it. It's required.
No, but you're saying who came up? I didn't listen to last podcast.
I began these nicknames. It was G-Man before it became G-Money. Wow.
We can call you. We can call Colin. You know. Cash money.
I think coin's good because it's literally one letter.
Cash money and G money.
Okay. Anyway. Anyway.
Cash,
cash and
coin. We'll call
the artist formerly known as Cash Money.
Dongwufeng.net/podcast is our podcast page. There you can find two notable things. One is the donate button, which you can do if you want, and the other is the podcast bios page, which is now more updated with Teresa's art on here. She has added a Brit and herself's pictures, and they are very good. And
Airbender.
And Brit's an Airbender, Teresa's an Earthbender. You can see all of us as our
only Firebender still
as our nation. I think Ben will be a Firebender, so you'll get a friend.
Okay. Yeah, we'll all be pretty even. Except, wait, does that mean?
Does what?
Is Jeff the only Waterbender?
Yeah.
That seems about right.
I mean, I don't know. Jeff's the only defensive, peaceful one? I don't know.
Yeah, pretty much.
The most wonderful thing about Jeff is that Jeff's the only one.
What is that from?
That's Tigger.
It's the Tigger song. How could you not know?
The most wonderful thing about Tigger.
Why are you referencing that now? Okay, anyway.
Why are you not referencing it?
Oh, one more note thing. We got during this podcast, we have a gameplay footage from the Korra video game out. I just reblogged that on Tumblr like a little bit ago. And
it looks adequate.
Jeff says it looks incredibly beautiful. I don't know. We'll see.
So there are two types of people in the world.
I literally haven't watched it, so I don't know yet. You can email us, Dylan at Dongwufeng, and at Tumblr at Dongwufeng, that's our Twitter as well. Follow D's Tumblr accounts, I say. My personal Tumblr is DylanFTSW. You can follow Allie and Mel's Ask blog at AskAllieMelFTSW or AskMelAllieFTSW. Which one?
It's Allie.
AskAllieMelFTSW. And you can follow Sam's Ask blog, which I don't remember the URL for.
It's Ask Sam or something, who cares?
which is a great one. And everyone else's Tumblr, which I want to put on the bios page, so maybe I'll do that after this. And you can send us voicemail. Yes, so next week, we don't know when the episode is going up, but it's probably on Friday, and we'll broadcast on Friday at some point. So that's basically where we're at. Yeah, did I miss anything? Oh, and post on the forums. Give us feedback on the podcast. Tell us literally anything. You can also send me an ask on Tumblr, saying literally anything, asking anything.
Tumblr seems to be getting really popular, like the Tumblr ask blogs, yours and Allie and Mel's and Sam's.
Yeah, 25.
That's pretty cool.
We're so popular.
25. I would say that a lot of the same people are asking stuff. It's not necessarily there are a lot
all
of people.
On and on.
Yeah. And yeah, shout outs to people like Escalations, Toon Gal, Alburn.
Escalations was the first one.
For July Sydney and others on Tumblr who are following, interacting with us on Tumblr and reblogging the podcast. Thank you for reblogging the podcast and stuff like that.
Thanks for feeding into my narcissism.
Hooray. Yes. Thank you for feeding into our narcissism. Any comments on anything?
Bees?
Question
mark. Lore, okay. Oh my god.
No one is going to get that. Anyways, let's just move on. They're in the habitat world. They do not pollinate their crops. Their crops
bees?
Are spores.
Question mark. Bees?
Okay.
Question mark?
What do you want?
No one else is saying.
Anything to end on?
Lorp, bees.
I think we should end on back off.
Oh my god. On what?
Back off, Mako.
Okay, that's a good one. Any other contenders?
Bees?
No, that's not a contender. Glorp is not a contender. There's
The Floor is Lava.
The Floor is Lava, but that's not actually from the episode. Anything else?
You basically
don't question me about jobs.
Don't question me about jobs.
Tattooed on my forehead, bees.
Bees or don't question me about jobs? Which one?
Both. Bees.
I think we're gonna go with Back Off Mako because it's the best.
Because actually, those two things could. Bees question mark. Oh no, and I think any jobs could be combined.
I think there's another bees. Good one to end on, which would be what is it? It's kale, right? Yeah, kale. I think that'd let's be another.
Oh, we'll always have kale.
Kale's easier.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3, kale.
Kale.
No.
Bees.